Okay, so for this deep dive, you guys have sent in, well, some really interesting stuff, a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, looks like a mix of some pretty intense social media threads and a news article all about the LA wildfires.
LA wildfires, definitely a hot topic, so to speak. But it seems like you're all interested in the bigger picture too, right? Like, where do we go from here? Climate change, individual choices.
Yeah, that sense of responsibility.
Exactly. Responsibility. Who has it? What does it even look like when we're facing these huge events? I mean, the article mentions what, like $55 billion in damages?
It's a staggering number.
It is. Just trying to wrap my head around that. But it's not just numbers, right? It's people's lives completely upended.
Absolutely. Think about it. Homes destroyed, families forced to relocate, and the emotional toll. That's something you can't even put a price tag on.
No, you can't. And then you've got President Biden stepping in, pledging to cover 180 days of costs.
Right, which brings in a whole other angle, the government's role in all of this.
For sure. And it's in the wake of these events that we see these really heated debates start to flare up.
Oh, yeah.
And your social media sources, they capture that perfectly.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? You see people wrestling with these big fundamental questions about climate change.
Like, what is the government's role? What can we even do as individuals?
Precisely. And you see a full spectrum of viewpoints. Some people, they're absolutely certain that it's human activity driving this rapid climate change.
Right. And they point to things like, the ice caps melting, the crazy weather patterns we're seeing, even
Shorter winters.
shorter winters in Canada, like someone mentioned.
Right. And then there are those who are pushing back hard. They see this warming period as just part of a natural cycle.
Some even going so far as to call climate change a hoax.
Yeah, you see that a lot. And it's interesting how some of them are using what's it called?
The null hypothesis.
Yeah, that's it. The null hypothesis.
Yeah.
Basically saying the burden of proof, it lies on those who are claiming that this is different, that this warming trend is different from anything we've seen before.
And it gets really complicated, right? Because you start digging into the science and you've got people talking about historical temperature data and trying to model future scenarios and trying to separate the natural fluctuations from the human-induced changes. I mean, it's a lot.
It is. And honestly, it feels like sometimes people are just talking past each other.
Right. But then there's this other layer that emerges from your sources, and I think it's super important, which is this whole question of infrastructure and politics.
Oh, yeah. Because that's where it gets real.
Yeah.
One of your sources talks about the fire hydrants in LA, how they just weren't designed to handle the demand with these bigger, more intense fires.
I remember that. Yeah, just couldn't keep up.
And it's not just about fire hydrants, is it? It's about how our cities are built
Yeah.
or not built,
Right, to withstand these kinds of changes, these kinds of events.
Exactly. And there was that one comment, I think it was from someone who used to live in Calgary, and they were talking about the need for cities to adapt,
To adapt, yeah.
invest in updating these aging systems. And they made a good point. They said, look, it doesn't even matter what's causing it at this point.
Right.
The reality is things are changing and we need to be ready.
Totally. But then it always comes back to, okay, so who pays for all of this? And you see that tension in your sources too, right? Like
Right.
what politicians want to prioritize versus what we actually need for the long term.
Well, yeah. It's a lot easier to get votes by promising shiny new highways than it is by talking about investing in water systems and fire protection, even if those things are critical for, dealing with this changing world.
Totally. It's like short-term gains versus long-term planning.
Oh.
Classic dilemma.
And then, of course, you've got the whole debate about taxes. Like, are people willing to pay more to fund these long-term investments?
It's tough. No easy answers there. But what I find fascinating is that in the middle of all these big abstract debates about science and politics, your sources bring us back down to earth.
Back to the human level.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, how do these global issues actually play out in people's everyday lives? What are they worried about? What keeps them up at night? And that's where you see the real anxiety start to emerge.
Oh, absolutely. Like, that story about the person struggling to find affordable home insurance in California.
Yeah, that one really hit me.
It's scary stuff. I mean, the costs are going through the roof, companies are canceling policies left and right, and people are starting to wonder, can they even afford to live in these high-risk areas anymore?
It's a real question. I mean, what happens if insurance becomes so expensive that it's just out of reach for most people?
Yeah, what does that mean for homeownership?
Right. What does that mean for communities?
Yeah, it's like we're seeing the first signs of a much bigger shift. Like, how are we going to manage risk in the future?
It's a question we're all going to have to grapple with, for sure.
It's not just about losing your home, though, is it? It's these anxieties about the future.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the sources you sent in, it sparked this whole debate about having kids,
Oh, wait.
you know, in a world facing climate change. Like, is
Right.
it even ethical?
That's a tough one. I
Right.
mean, that thread got pretty
Really
intense.
intense
People
stuff.
wrestling with some heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Like, is it responsible to bring kids into a world that feels so uncertain?
Right. Or on the flip side, do we kind of have this obligation to raise a generation that's equipped to, you know,
Yeah.
help fix these
It's
problems?
almost like a philosophical question.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it just shows you how personal all of this is becoming, right? It's not just some abstract scientific concept anymore. Climate change is actually shaping people's values
Yeah.
and their decisions about like the most fundamental things in
It
life.
is.
And reading through some of these social media posts, I don't know, I just get this feeling that some people are just frozen.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean.
Like they're just overwhelmed by the scale of it all.
That powerlessness.
Yeah, like what can one person even do when you're talking about these massive global
But
forces?
isn't it interesting how, even with that feeling,
Yeah.
some people find a way? Like, there's this one thread you sent that focuses on this idea called
Yeah.
the precautionary principle.
Oh, yeah. The precautionary principle. Yeah.
Have you heard of that?
Vaguely.
So basically, it says, like, when there's a potential for harm,
Okay.
even if we don't know for sure what's causing it,
Yeah.
it's better to be safe than sorry.
Right. Better to be safe than sorry.
Take action just in case.
So, even if you're not like totally convinced about climate change,
Yeah.
this principle saying, hey, it's probably still a good idea to
Yeah.
reduce your impact just in case.
Just in case, exactly. And it kind of shifts the focus,
Yeah.
you know? It's less about winning an argument,
Right.
more about, well, taking practical steps towards a more sustainable future.
I like that. It's like, why wait around for absolute proof when you can just start doing something now?
Exactly.
Potentially avoid some of the risks.
Manage those risks.
Okay. So are people actually using this precautionary principle? Like, do you see that in the sources?
Oh, totally. I mean, you see a whole range of responses from people making huge lifestyle changes to those who are just taking small steps. But
Yeah.
it's all in the same direction. You know, driving less, eating less meat,
Right.
using eco-friendly products, that sort of thing.
So it's not necessarily about everyone doing the exact same thing. It's about people finding their own way to contribute.
Exactly. And that's where the idea of collective responsibility comes in, right?
Okay.
Like, yes, individual choices, they matter, but they're amplified when we all act together, you know, when we push for systemic change.
Yeah, when we start to create a culture where everyone values
Yeah.
sustainability. I mean, I keep thinking back to that person who was having trouble with insurance. Like, sure, they can choose to live a more sustainable life,
Yeah.
but if their house burns down because of a wildfire,
Right.
it kind of makes those individual actions feel pretty small.
It does. It shows the limits of just focusing on ourselves.
Yeah.
We need those bigger solutions.
Right. So we need policies that encourage sustainable practices, invest in renewable energy,
Yeah.
protect our natural resources.
And help communities adapt.
Yeah.
Because things are changing whether we like it or not.
It really is like this giant puzzle, isn't it?
It is.
Like individual
Dollar.
choices, government policies, technology,
Yeah.
it all has to work together.
Yeah. But there's this one token that keeps coming back to me. Like, it's almost this underlying assumption in all these discussions.
Okay, what is it?
The assumption that we have time.
Time.
Time to adapt. Time to transition to a more sustainable way of life.
Oh, wow.
But what if we're wrong?
Okay.
What if the most urgent thing isn't about reducing our carbon footprint today?
Yeah.
What if it's about figuring out how to live in a world that's already changing super fast?
Whoa. That's a whole different way of looking at it.
It is. So we're not just talking about preventing things from getting worse. We're talking about how to live with the impacts that are already happening right now.
So it's not how do we stop this? It's how do we live with this?
Exactly. And that's a huge shift mentally.
It is.
But I think it's necessary. Like, we need to prepare for a world that's different, even as we try to mitigate further damage.
So it's like a two-pronged approach.
Yeah.
We can't give up on reducing our impact,
Right.
but we also need to get real about adaptation.
We do. And that means, rethinking a lot of things. You know, urban planning, investing in drought-resistant crops, developing early warning systems for these extreme weather events.
I mean, it sounds overwhelming.
It is a massive undertaking, no doubt.
Yeah.
But it's also an opportunity.
An opportunity.
Yeah, to rethink how we live.
Yeah.
You know, to reevaluate our values, to create a future that's more resilient, more equitable for everyone.
It's like we've been talking about responsibility on all these different levels, right? Like our own choices, what the government does, even our responsibility to, you know, future generations. But this whole thing about adaptation, about being resilient, it's like a whole different type of responsibility almost.
It is. It's about taking responsibility for, well, the world as it is.
Okay.
Not how we wish it was.
Right.
And that takes a different way of thinking.
So, okay, so let's get practical here. If we need to adapt to a world that's changing so fast,
right,
like where do we even begin?
Well, think about those sources you sent. All those anxieties you people are expressing, worries about the cost of living.
Yeah.
About safety, about the future for their kids. Those anxieties, that's our starting point.
So you're saying we can use those anxieties like as a roadmap to figure out what needs to change.
Exactly. Like take that example with the homeowner struggling to find insurance.
Yeah.
It's not just their problem, right? It's a symptom of a whole system.
Right.
It's not keeping up.
Okay.
So we have to ask, how do we make insurance more accessible, especially in those high-risk areas?
Okay.
How do we help people who were displaced by climate events?
Financially, you mean?
Yeah, financially. How do we build communities that are more resilient?
So it's about moving beyond those individual solutions and thinking about how we change the system itself.
That's it. And that's where it gets really interesting. It's not just about building seawalls.
Right.
Or, you know, developing drought-resistant crops.
Yeah.
It's about how we see ourselves in relation to the planet, creating a future that's, well, more sustainable, but also more equitable.
Yeah, where everyone has what they need.
Exactly.
It's a powerful vision, but honestly, it also feels kind of daunting, you know, thinking about how much needs to change. Mm-hmm. It's a lot to take in.
It is. But we don't have to have all the answers right now.
Okay.
The important thing is that we're asking the right questions, being willing to try things, you know, to experiment, to learn from our mistakes, and to work together. That's how we'll create a better future.
Okay, so for everyone listening out there, what does this all mean for you? I mean, we've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. We've talked about the science, the whole question of responsibility, the anxieties that people are feeling. We even talked about, you know, what if we don't have time to fix everything? Like, what does it even look like to adapt to a world that's already changing right now?
It's a lot to process, for sure. But hopefully it leaves you with more questions than answers.
Yeah.
Because those questions, they're what will drive real change.
So as you're thinking about all this, as you're maybe rereading that news article or going back to those social media threads, think about what really stuck with you. What insights are you going to take away from this? What will you do differently? I mean, it doesn't have to be something huge, but every little action, every step we take towards a more resilient future, it matters.
It does.
This deep dive, it's just the beginning. The real work starts now.
Thanks for listening, everybody.